This is a Triple J podcast.
Prescription pills, it was alcohol, it was ice, it was G.
That may be the view of young people, it's not the view of our government.
If I don't meet a girl, it's pretty hard to tell her that I'm uncontactable.
To connect, to have a good time, to dance it off like nobody's watching.
This is going to have an effect for generations to come.
Have you ever wondered what it would be like to sign up for the Army, the Navy or the Air Force? Are there parts of the job that would maybe worry you? For some women in the Australian Defence Force, it's not the threat of war that worries them when they go to work. It's their colleagues. That's what people involved in an historic class action are saying. Women in the ADF coming forward with allegations of sexual assault, harassment and discrimination at work. Angel Parsons with you for Hack, and today we hear what life can be like in the military as a woman.
I couldn't wholeheartedly say that I would feel comfortable sending a family member into the ADF because of concerns over how complaints are handled.
Yeah, if you're serving, what's your experience been like? Because we're hearing calls for lasting cultural change within defence. Maybe you're considering a career in defence. How do these repeated stories like this make you feel about signing up? We're going to be getting into that soon, and I'd really love to hear your experiences, your thoughts. You can text in 0439 757 555 is the number. Also coming up, First Nations people are going to prison at much higher rates than non-Indigenous people. We meet a group of young people changing the justice system from the inside. First, though.
Hack. Well, Aussie creatives are breathing a sigh of relief this morning with the Albanese government announcing a new push to protect their work from artificial intelligence.
On Triple J.
When you go to watch a movie or listen to music, interact with any kind of art, really, legally, you have to pay for that content, right? Whether it's through a streaming service like Spotify or Netflix or buying a vinyl or book. Because copyright laws exist to protect original works. It's how artists can make money. So how would it sit with you if massive tech companies were getting all that content and art for free? That's what the tech sector wants. They've been urging the federal government to change copyright laws. And today, months after the idea was first floated, the government confirmed, no, it will not be weakening copyright laws. And you can imagine there's a lot of relief from artists about this. Soon we're speaking to someone that you'll be very familiar with. But first, Ariana Lichente explains.
We know that AI is moving rapidly. I can say that across government, everyone is looking at the issue of AI and how they need to adapt and potentially what rules or changes need to be put in place.
All over the world, tech companies are trying to improve their artificial intelligence products. And they do that by feeding AI models more and more data. But what if that data is the original work of Australian artists, musicians, and authors?
Artificial intelligence has great potential but also poses a number of risks and challenges to our existing regulatory and legislative environments.
Michelle Rowland is the Attorney General, and today she had a simple message for tech companies.
We are making it very clear that we will not be entertaining a text and data mining exception. Australia is a place where we value our creators, and we will not be enabling the use for free, without permission, and basically without risk of infringement.
Hang on, what's a text and data mining exception, or TDM?
So my first ask today of government is for the Attorney General to urgently amend our Copyright Act to look at fair use and text and data mining exceptions.
Back in July, the co-founder of Atlassian and chair of the Tech Council of Australia, Scott Farquhar, asked the government to review its copyright laws.
Fixing this one thing could unlock billions of dollars of foreign investment in Australia.
He was pushing for the big tech companies to be able to freely train AI models on Australian creative works. Think books, films, music, TV, through a copyright exemption. It's something the Productivity Commission floated too, with a report in August, but later admitted it hadn't modelled the potential impact.
The Productivity Commission has not looked at the creative industries, has not modelled their benefit to Australia, has not modelled whether creative industries would expand or contract as a result of AI.
The idea had artists super worried, with some calling it theft of original work without payment. Here's First Nations rapper Briggs at a Senate inquiry last month.
All we're trying to do is future-proof that to make sure we have sustainable careers, not just for myself, But for the next generation of young blackfellas, it's the equivalence of seeing a boomerang in an airport that's been mass-produced. It lacks authenticity, and that's why you don't pick it up.
Today, the government made its position on a TDM clear.
We are convening today, and tomorrow we'll have the reconstituted Copyright and AI Reference Group within my department.
Now, the Copyright and AI Reference Group will meet to see if copyright laws need a review with AI in mind. And so far, the creative industry has welcomed the news. Annabelle Hurd is the CEO of the Australian Recording Industry Association.
Basically what they're saying is we will not agree to dilute and weaken our copyright laws so that a small number of very large tech companies can have free and open access to very important and valuable cultural works.
And Holly Rankin, the musician behind Jack River, has been lobbying the government too.
We need to put humanity back into politics, and we need to make our politics about Australians again, and the decision today reflects a step in that right direction. In the face of lobbying from the largest technology companies in the world, we've got a government that does care about the Australian people, does care about artists, creatives and culture.
Hack on Triple J.
Ariana Lachente reporting there, and on the text line someone's asking, can they now go after the companies that have been doing this for years? That is a good question, and all of this is a really big deal for artists, writers, filmmakers across the country. A lot of people welcoming this news, as we just heard there, but there are still a lot of questions about the kind of impact AI and big tech will have on the music industry going forward. And with us to share a bit of insight is Sam Hale. You know Sam from the Jungle Giants, and he's with us now. Sam, thanks so much for joining us.
Hi, thank you for having me.
How worried are you about the future, about how AI is impacting the music industry in Australia?
There's different ways to look at it. I feel like for me, I utilize certain aspects of AI in my production. You know, there's so many really cool tools that you can get through AI, especially with making music. The one thing that I think is really important for us to be aware of is the big tech behind the product. You know, a lot, especially with what happened today, you know, luckily our government had the artist back, but you know, big tech tries to get away with a couple of things. And I think this is what's going on right now.
And what are the main worries from where you sit with AI? Is it about kind of protecting the art and the artistry and the originality and, you know, human creation of it? Is it about protecting income streams? Like, what are some of the big problems that you see here?
Yeah, I mean, for me, the biggest part would be ownership because, you know, if AI wants to kind of take our intellectual property, they can essentially sell it, use it, and this isn't to the artist's choice. You know, we can't opt in or opt out, so that's a scary thing. You're not really selling your music, but it is being sold. So less about the money, but more about, you know, you spend years making records that you absolutely love, and once you share them, this is a really important thing for the artist, but also the fans of that music. And I just think the spooky part is big tech trying to kind of take away the ownership from artists.
Mm.
That's a scary little thing right there.
Do you think it's pretty likely that tech companies have already used your work and your songs to train AI or, you know, in the creation of other AI music? And like, how would you know if that's been done?
I don't even know how you would know, because obviously this is quite landmark. This is like a new thing. We haven't really dealt with something like this before. I think it's just important, like say AI wanted to emulate an artist or use an artist's music to train its product. I'm sure if they let artists opt in for that option, there'd be some that would take it, that would see an opportunity there. But yeah, we're kind of moving into new ground here. So I think this is why it's important to be talking about these topics, to be raising them, find out the legality behind all of it.
This is Hack. I'm Angel Parsons. I'm speaking with Sam Hale from the Jungle Giants about the government's announcement today that they will not be weakening copyright laws to allow tech companies free rein to train AI using Australian works. Sam, what was your response when you heard that?
I was absolutely stoked. I mean, I'm actually going into Parliament with Jack River tomorrow to do like an artist round table and talk about this issue. And I was ready to go in steaming hot, but now this is really good news. Obviously there's more to do always, but I was absolutely stoked and you know, a little surprised this morning. It's pretty incredible that our government did what it did today and is protecting artists. Yeah, I think when I think about big tech, you'd like to hope that the people behind all these products love music, but there's a chance that they love money more than music. So that's why we have to be you know, protecting our arts as much as we can.
Mm. It's been a few months since this idea was kind of put forward and that's been talked about. Did it cause a lot of anxiety in the artist community thinking that, you know, the government could let tech companies use your art with no payment or compensation?
Yeah. 100%. Yeah, we actually, Holly from Jack River, she's incredible and she's become a huge voice between many different artists in Australia. She actually started a massive like Instagram group chat with like every band and she's been sending us updates of what's been going on and it has been very anxiety inducing. But what's been incredible is artists are willing to stand up for what they believe in here, and I feel like it's not just for us. It's for new up-and-coming bands and it's for Aussies out there who love Australian music, you know?
I'm curious to get your take about whether you use AI for music production. And you've spoken about taking more control over the production of your music in your last couple of albums.
Yeah,
AI can be a really interesting tool for production. Do you use it much? Can you see yourself using it much in the future?
Yeah, 100%. And like that's the thing. Like I think there's just so much to explore in this new technology, right? As a music maker, there's a program that I really love. And what it does is it's AI stem separation. So say I make a beat and it's a kick drum and a snare drum and a hats, and then I want to separate them later, but maybe I can't find the original project that I had them in. In the past, I'd be like, oh, they're all kind of stuck together, right? So, but now you can throw it into AI stem separation and separate each stem individually to a really good audio quality. So it's absolutely usable. So like things like this, I absolutely love. And I think like my only worry would be the tech companies behind these things. We just have to keep them at bay. That's all I think about. But I love the tools that we have right now. They're fun.
And when we look at, you know, how much AI is now on a platform like Spotify, for example, and how much AI music is being generated as one problem, and then also the problem we've been talking about of these companies, you know, using your work, other Australian artists' work to inform and train their AI models. I guess like it's one thing coming at this as a successful touring artist like yourself. Mm-hmm. Are you hearing from other young emerging artists trying to break into the industry now? Like how would you be feeling if you were kind of coming at it fresh and new?
You know, it's one of those things where I think there's still so much unknown, especially for artists like myself or up-and-coming artists. It's a completely new space. This is like landmark kind of things that we're thinking about, and there's a lot to learn, but also, you know, I think we have to ask the right questions ahead of time. We have to kind of preempt these things.
The fact that you said before how like you wouldn't really know like if your work is being used to inform AI, like is that something that you would like to have a bit more transparency around?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, yeah, it's because generally when our music gets used in any aspect, we're approached or we even have collection agencies. I don't really know what, you know, say if AI uses your product to train its machine or whatever, we don't really know that. So I would love to know if we could have, if we do have systems in place like that. Like I say, this is all new territory, but I think it is important to know if it is being used 100%.
And I'm curious to get your take because some people have been talking about this idea of opting out, that, you know, if some artists don't want their art to be informing AI at all, that they want the chance to opt out, even if the copyright laws are all staying in place. What's your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, that makes complete sense to me. And I would also understand if some artists want to opt in, do you know what I mean? But it should always be at the discretion of the artist, right? I think every artist should have their own opinion heard on this. Some might see a great opportunity, right? If it's a new program utilized by a lot of other artists, having their music inform the machine could be an insane opportunity. But on the same strain, you know, if an artist doesn't want to be involved with that, it's completely understandable.
It's so good to get your take from where you sit on all of this. Sam Hale from the Jungle Giants, thank you so much for sharing your insights with us on Hack today.
Thank you. Cheers for having me.
Hack. In an unprecedented move, four former service women are taking our Defence Force to court.
On Triple J.
Have you ever considered a career in the military? Because we're going to hear now about what that experience can be like if you're a woman. And a heads up, for the next 10 or so minutes, we'll be talking about allegations of sexual assault. because a class action has been launched. It alleges widespread and systemic sexual violence, harassment and discrimination within the ADF. And lawyers expect there'll be thousands of women involved in the lawsuit. So is the ADF an unsafe place for women? In a moment, we'll speak to someone who spends a lot of time advocating for a more equitable and inclusive defence force. First, our reporter Shalila Medora has this story.
I don't say this lightly, but it is a national disgrace. It is completely shameful what is going on in the ADF for women.
Josh Aylward is a lawyer with firm JGA Sadler. They're launching a class action lawsuit on behalf of women who've served in the Army, Navy and Air Force. He says he's heard shocking stories of sexual assault, harassment and discrimination against women in uniform.
It's not war that probably concerns these women the most, or the threat of war. It is their own colleagues when they go to work every day.
He says too often when women in the ADF report sexual violence, they're the ones who face the repercussions.
Sometimes they move to another base, and quite often they are the ones that end up having to leave the military because it is just not dealt with in an appropriate way internally, and they need help outside the military.
It was like the shame was on you. It was all kept quiet, hush, hush.
Donna Manton is the survivor of two sexual assaults while serving in the military, and says victims are often not believed or silenced.
If you did bring it up, you were seen as the troublemaker or, you know, making extra work for people.
She thinks the class action lawsuit will give victim survivors back some of the power they lost.
They want to feel heard, they want their story told, and they want the damage that was done to them recognised. That validation, that recognition goes part some way to that dignity and that autonomy that you're denied when you're sexually assaulted.
The class action is opt-out, which means every woman who served in the ADF between 2003 and May this year will be automatically enrolled unless they choose to pull out.
There are literally more than 10,000 women that will be affected by what has happened at the ADF. The ADF is the most dangerous place for a woman to work in this country, and it's not because of, you know, the fact that they have to go to war.
A Royal Commission into Veterans Suicide released last year found that sexual violence was a key contributor to a toxic culture in the ADF and recommended an inquiry into it. But that hasn't happened yet. In a statement, the ADF said,
"There is work to be done, and that is why the recommendations of the Royal Commission are being implemented as a priority. There is no place for sexual violence or misconduct in defence."
Hack on Triple J.
Shalila Medora with that story. And a reminder, if this has raised any concerns, you can always contact the Open Arms Veterans and Families Counselling Service on 1800 011 046. And we're going to speak about this some more now with Rachel Falzon. Rachel's the president of the Women in Defence Association. Rachel, thanks so much for speaking with us on Hack today.
I really appreciate your time to talk about this and share a bit about what's going on in the defence sector at the moment.
Yeah, were you shocked by some of the allegations and claims that were made in this class action?
Unfortunately, I have to say that I'm no longer finding myself shocked by these claims. I guess for those who work outside of the defence sector, there is a long-standing history that has been documented in reports going back into the 90s capturing these same issues surrounding discrimination and sexual violence. Back in 1996, the Women in Australian Defence Force report was put out as well, and it just seems to be a decades-long issue. The only thing I find myself shocked by is the lack of urgency and transparency to actually provide a safe workplace.
Have you heard similar stories of sexual harassment and abuse and, you know, the wider cultural issues? Have you heard those kind of similar stories from your members?
Yeah, absolutely. So we have quite a large membership base around the country, and it is one of the predominant issues that we get contacted for is people facing discrimination and disciplinary action as a result of making claims. There are a lot of people who unfortunately have started to take their stories public because of the systemic failures. And unfortunately, what we're seeing is this rising trend of particularly women who are experiencing these issues, but who haven't been able to find any appropriate course of action taken in regards to their claims.
And what have you heard from your members since this class action launched?
I think the biggest thing is it has been welcome because it can potentially be this catalyst for change. There is this almost dire wish for there to be accountability now. And ultimately, it's an Australian government workplace. They're in direct control of how this is managed. So I guess there's just some hope there that there will be some real and meaningful reform as a result of this class action.
For many years now, like as you were saying before, there's been reports and inquiries and reviews into women's experiences in the ADF. How might a class action make a difference here?
Well, it has a really big opportunity to provide this broader awareness to the Australian public about what's going on in the Australian Defence Forces. It's really important for people to understand that this isn't new to ADF members. It is that long-standing history that we have there. Really hoping that this could be the reason reform is pushed through urgently. Some of my biggest concerns at the moment is that whilst the government does talk about trying to implement some of the Royal Commission findings, of which one entire chapter was dedicated to this topic, that there isn't progress being made fast enough, and it could ultimately just be a checkbox exercise. There's always talk about progress and the need to change culture, and we're not really seeing that come through. The greater hope here is that now there's a class action, that something might really be done about it.
Rachel, for people out there who really have no idea what it's like in defence, which would be most of us, I would imagine many people who are joining very young, which, you know, comes with all sorts of different vulnerabilities. Can you give us some insight into the people who are signing up? What kind of impact is this culture having, particularly on young people?
Yeah, there is a bit of a blend here because, you know, there's no one experience that you can talk about that reflects everyone's experience. Mm. People do go into it and do have very meaningful careers and feel very fulfilled, but there is unfortunately a large proportion of people who are going into this and being failed by this system. What we do need to do is increase the representation of women in the ADF. We only have about 20-odd percent of representation by women, and I think what we need to be able to do is have a larger proportion represented to try and combat some of the issues being experienced. But it's unfortunate because we do really like to encourage women to join the ADF because it is such a meaningful career pathway. There are just a number of challenges that are blocking them from being able to participate meaningfully in circumstances.
Yeah. Do you think stories like this are deterring women from joining in the first place?
It really is a difficult thing to have to try and navigate as your willingness to serve and wanting to represent your country and protect it, and then also wondering whether or not you're going to be safe in your work environment. It's a very challenging conversation to have with young girls, but they're not oblivious.
The ADF says it is working to create a better culture. Do you think there are some positive steps being implemented?
There are people in there who are trying to do the right thing and work towards the right thing. But unfortunately, I don't see representation from the voices who should be in this conversation. And I would note their absence of voice. Minister Keogh, our Minister for Veterans Affairs and Defence Personnel, Greg Moriarty, who is our Secretary of Defence. I would really like to see their voices in this conversation and what they're doing to prioritise the safety of their workplaces, because their absence of voice in this conversation really isn't appropriate. What I'd like to see from them going forward is taking bold action and to be confident in knowing that Australia is behind them in protecting their workforce and start taking action on the perpetrators and removing them from service. They've had decades to prepare appropriate legislation, and the time is for them to do something now. So I really hope that this class action drives them towards that change.
It can be a difficult story to talk about, but it's an important one, and we're really grateful for you chatting with us today. Rachel Falzon, Women in Defence Association President, thanks so much for speaking with us on Hack.
Thank you.
And Matt Keogh, the Minister for Defence Personnel, said that there is no place for sexual violence or inappropriate behaviour in defence or in any other workplace for that matter, and we take this very seriously. He said, we encourage and support anyone who experiences sexual misconduct to report the incident. We promote a culture that does not tolerate abuse, the acts decisively when harm occurs, and that places the safety and dignity of all current and former defence personnel at the centre of our actions.
This is Hack.
The rest of the justice system doesn't really reflect the way that communities would resolve conflicts.
On Triple J.
Access to justice can be much harder if you're a First Nations person. And Indigenous people are still going to prison at much higher rates than non-Indigenous people. 32% of Australia's prison population are First Nations people. And it means some people are now losing faith in the justice system, and this is all a major goal in closing the gap. So our reporter Lillian Rangia has been speaking with a group of young First Nations people changing the justice system from the inside, making a career in law. Here's what she's been hearing.
So my exam's next week and I feel pretty prepared.
Aaliyah's 20 years old and she's got her shit together. She's about to finish a law degree at Charles Darwin University and she's keen to follow in the footsteps of her dad, who's one of the Northern Territory's most prominent Aboriginal lawyers, but she hasn't always felt like she belongs.
It feels really scary in the beginning, and then once you're in it and there's a lot of supportive people around and your peers and all of the Aboriginal lecturers and stuff, they make you really feel like you belong.
Over the past 10 years, there's been a big increase in the number of Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander students studying law. Last year, the number of First Nations students starting tertiary degrees reached a record high. But ABS data suggests there are still more First Nations people in prison each year than starting uni degrees. Aaliyah still doesn't know exactly what she wants to do long term, but she's considering a pathway in criminal law to help change that.
It's just seeing how much Aboriginal people overrepresent the legal system in criminal law, I think it would be really good to just be in that space and help the people who are most vulnerable.
The law is a colonial tool and it's always been used against First Nations people.
Dr. Gemma Sentence is a proud Wiradjuri woman and she also studied law.
Whether that's forceful land acquisition, the removal of Aboriginal children, there's been lots of different legal instruments which have sought to erase Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people's sovereignty.
But her experience at uni and after graduation was very different to Aaliyah's.
For lack of a better word, I haven't worked out what word describes it, but I had a bit of a breakdown and ended up leaving the legal profession. And I've come to realise that I could see myself changing and I couldn't really be who I was.
A decade ago, almost half the First Nations students enrolled in law degrees dropped out. Now that's down to a third. Dr. Sentence has just finished her PhD exploring the experiences of First Nations law students and graduates, and she reckons it's still pretty tough.
Not only have Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people been formally excluded from university institutions, but also they've created a situation where the Western ways of knowing, being and doing are also privileged.
One big difference between Aaliyah and Dr. Sentence's experience is that Aaliyah went through a pre-law program, which offers First Nations students an alternative pathway into law instead of the ATAR system.
It's 3 weeks full intensive. There's seven assessments. It's like doing pre-season training, you know. We supply a culturally safe space, like even just asking those traditional elders to come in.
Larrakia man James Parfitt-Fijo helped set up CDU's pre-law program alongside Aaliyah's dad, John, and he's pretty passionate about encouraging more Aboriginal people to pursue criminal law.
You know, even some of the youths I've dealt with over the years, when we sit down with a group of us brother boys, that kid is totally different when we're sitting in a circle than a bunch of correctional officers sitting in a circle.
James reckons it should also be compulsory for all lawyers and law students to learn about First Nations cultures, legal systems and history.
There's a lot of love, there's a lot of respect, there's a lot of wisdom, there's a lot of teaching, but they don't get to see the beauty and strength of our culture because every day they're just seeing negativity after negativity after negativity.
It just wasn't a very positive experience at all.
James Morgan's family hails from Kakadu. He became a lawyer to try and help people, but realised quickly criminal law wasn't the way he could do that.
I saw the victims who reminded me of family. I saw people that were pleading guilty to those crimes that looked like family members.
James reckons it's impossible to ignore the role law has played in the lives of his family and community.
Both grandparents were taken and removed under Aboriginal Ordinance Acts, the 67 referendum and the Land Rights Act coming into place, and then, you know, Native Title. These are all quite major legal steps in history that have had all direct impacts on my family and pretty much every family here in the Northern Territory.
He plans on working in land rights and commercial law to help his people set themselves up better economically. And even though it wasn't easy, he's glad he finished his degree.
What I've seen is that a lot of Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander students, You know, there can be deaths in families. There can be really, you know, traumatic things that come up and actually stop people from finishing their law degree. My biggest advice to anybody studying law or anything is just try and get it done as fast as possible.
Hack on Triple J.
Lillian Rangia, Darwin reporter, reporting there. And that is all we have time for on Hack today. Still hearing from you, though, on our, AI music story from earlier in the day. And I just want to say, if you miss Hack, you can listen on our podcast. We've been dropping some special eps with extended cuts and deep dives. There's one that went up on Saturday about AI that I think a lot of you will find very interesting. You can follow Hack on Instagram. We're constantly updating you, breaking stories down there. For now, that is all we have time for on Hack today. Drive's coming up next. I'll catch you next time. Hack.